Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome into Attacking Third, brought to you by PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865. Darian Jenkins, Lisa Carlin, and Jenny Chu here for you this morning. We had an exciting day of Champions League semifinals on the men's side yesterday. Manchester City against Real Madrid goes down to penalty kicks. Darian, how insane was it all?
I mean, it was a really good game. Champions League this year has been wild on both sides, men's and women's. But I'm gutted for City because they were obviously the better team. You look at all the stats, they attacked more. But Real Madrid, I mean, You lose in penalties, and they weren't good. So
they weren't, exactly. And that's all Real Madrid wanted in the end, was just to get to pens. You could feel it towards the end of the 90 minutes and the match ultimately as it was winding down. It was like, okay, just get to pens, just get to pens, if you're looking at it from the Real Madrid perspective.
Yep, and that Barcelona-PSG match was absolutely insane. I mean, we had an absolute treat on the semifinals, and those are going to be set, on the quarterfinals and the semifinals are now set. Let's return to women's football now. We're going to go over to Brazil, a story that we covered earlier this week when there was a protest of his return. Clayton Limas, a Santos head coach, has now stepped down as the head coach. Basically, guys, the protest in solidarity worked. I mean, I think that that was what we got out of this, Lisa.
Ultimately, did it work? I think that it's appalling that Santos as a club didn't fire him.
Yep.
They reinstated him. So I don't think necessarily it worked in that sense, because then the club came out and said that Lima was receiving threats and different things on social media, and ultimately they accepted his resignation. The club didn't do anything at that point. So to me, that's a really big loss by Santos as a club, and to protect and respect and listen to the players.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think that, I mean, the solidarity is amazing, and I love that players and the fans and the supporters are speaking out about it. But again, I completely agree. It's Santos, you had the full position of power to rid the club of this man. This to me says, okay, clearly the rot grows really, really deep with Santos. It is not just the coach, because if he's having to step away and they accepted his resignation, you had the opportunity to fire him and to make things better for these players and for players that are aspiring to be professional footballers for this club.
And the fact that the club, maybe it came down to a mutual decision between them and Lima to be like, okay, you're going to go. Why don't you resign and we'll accept your resignation?
He didn't deserve that at all.
Exactly.
Yeah, when we're talking about someone who has been accused of harassment by 19 players, the players wrote letters. I mean, there was so much, I guess, evidence in terms of all of the other players kind of protesting, and they allow him to resign. That's a great point, Lisa. Let's go over. They have now hired a new head coach. And he has previously been with Santos, correct?
Yeah, apparently. Claudio Carvalho, I believe is how you say it. This is his second stint back with Santos. So he's been around the club and in it. And as Darian alluded to, the rot, it seems, that Santos runs deep. And it's just the tip of the iceberg is what we're seeing and hearing about from these players. And the fact that this new head coach has already been involved with the club, it raises some question marks about his integrity and his honesty in the role.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, we're going to move over to NWSL now. So for the Portland Thorns, head coach Mike Norris has transitioned to the front office from head coach to technical director. After a disappointing start to the season, there is now an interim coach named Rob Gale. And Karina LeBlanc announced that a search for the new head coach for the Portland Thorns is ongoing. Darian, this is a bit of an unusual move. We typically see a sacking or a moving on of a coach, but not necessarily being allowed to stay and switch position within the same organization.
Maybe it's an NWSL thing. When I was at Kansas City, City, Lisa brought up, I had a coach at the time who got moved from his position to some other position in the club. I don't know if it was technical director, like recruiting something. But I think it's more so the club saying, well, we don't want to fire them. That's bad PR. Portland really doesn't need more of that right now. So I think making that move and knowing he's still involved in some sort of the soccer aspect was what they wanted. They didn't want the negative headlines of a firing or a resignation or something like that. But I'm interested to see who they're looking to get as a head coach, mm-hmm. because it's really difficult to find somebody qualified and that can handle the pressure and morph a team into a winning team. It's not an easy feat, even with all of the superstars that you have at Portland. So I'm very intrigued to see how this coach is going to do if players are bought in, because it's just another move within the system. I don't know how effective that is.
With Rob Gale, he was an assistant coach and came in with Portland before the 2023 season. And to your point, D, so many times we see coaches go from first assistant to head coach. And how often does that not work out? I mean, that was the case with Mike mm-hmm. Norris. He took over last year for 2023 after Rian Wilkinson resigned at the end of 2022. And it didn't work out for Mike Norris. It's not up to the task. So is that the right move, and is that the next step? I think it's really hard to tell. There's such a big jump between first assistant and head coach that people don't know how deep that water is until they jump in.
Do you think that it's because there is an amount of time needed to make a big transition like that to the system, to, you know, just the fact that the Bethal family has taken over, and what time do they insert their tactics or bring in their own people into the system?
I think there is a time for it, and that's why so often clubs, when they're looking for head coaches, look for coaches that have already been in the league and been first mm-hmm. assistants, but it's a really hard transition to make, and there's a lot of pressure on that position, especially when you're at a championship club like Portland Thorns under new ownership that want to win and want to be at the top of the table with money to put it into place. And if you're not succeeding and doing your job correctly, they're going to try to switch things up.
And if you don't have the players bought into whatever system you're trying to play or how you're trying to infiltrate tactics, how you're trying to beat teams, that doesn't really suit the personnel you have. Mm-hmm. We see that time and time again, specifically in the NWSL. I don't know. It's a hard transition. Clubs like that in Houston, it's difficult to know what's going to happen and how players are meant to feel confident with so much change happening from a leadership role.
Yeah, it's so interesting, though, because when we talk about Portland Thorns, they're winless in the first four matches, right? We're going into match day five. That's something that we have not seen from the Portland Thorns. So we needed to see some sort of change, and maybe this is the change, maybe not the one that we wanted or expected, but we will see how that goes. Let's go ahead and look at the NWSL weekend schedule, because we have a big slate of football matches to come. Orlando Pride is playing against the San Diego Wave on Prime, Racing Louisville against Utah Royals, Portland Thorns against Houston Dash, both struggling teams. We're going to get into that one. Washington Spirit against Gotham. That's going to be interesting, and that is on CBS. Casey Curran against Bay FC as well. Kansas City and Bay FC both scoring lots of goals, but no defense.
Huh? NWSL back on CBS. Let's go.
that's a good point there. That's a good point. We're going to have NWSL on CBS, and CBS Sports Network is Angel City against North Carolina Courage. We're going to get into all of these matches. Let's go ahead and start where I talked about both clubs kind of struggling, kind of being in disarray in Portland Thorns, like we just mentioned, and the Houston Dash. Portland, like I said, winless in the first four matches, while they are tied with the most conceded goals, both of those sides. 10 goals in the first four matches of the season. How do you see this one going? What are you expecting?
This is a big test for Portland to go against a Houston Dash side that is also struggling at the start of this season. So two teams that really have failed to kind of execute their game plan throughout the first four match days. This is going to be an opportunity for fans, for media, for Portland themselves to look at them internally and say, are we good enough or do we need more of a shakeup, right? They've rearranged their coaching staff. I think that can bring a resurgence to a team, but are they going to try to switch their tactics, try to buy into new ones? Are we going to see personnel changes? It's going to be a very big test for the Thorns this weekend against Houston, a side that has been struggling. They come into games late. They just struggle to complete 90-minute matches for both of these sides. I think it's going to be a little bit sloppy, honestly.
What about Houston, Darian?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a sloppy game. But if I were Houston, I would be more intimidated to play Portland than I think Portland's intimidated to play Houston. Portland at least has, I think, more of a solid skeleton of what they're trying to do. They have players and leadership who are really taking accountability for the lack of results that they're having. Houston, I don't even think their formation suits them. Portland at least has a little bit more of a backing that I would feel confident going into a game against. But if you're Houston, switch to a four-back. try to lock out Sophia Smith, Morgan Weaver, try to go on transitions. I think try to leave all of the BS off of the field as much as you possibly can, because there's a lot of things happening beyond mm-hmm. their control with mm-hmm. Maria Sanchez, and who knows yeah. what that locker room is like. There's a lot that could affect how the team is already feeling when they're really low that could be brought on the pitch. And at least Portland, I think there's some movement. The head coach is removed. You've got an interim coach or a coach right now who you're familiar with, but I'm not really sure. I expect yeah. a sloppy game.
Houston's not going to change from a three-back to a four-back.
I hope they do. They have to change something.
But they're not going to. Alonso has a system that he wants to play. He's implementing a three-back. He doesn't care that he doesn't have defenders playing in the back three. They're midfielders.
Lisa, it is very wild. I think that this is something that we continue to talk about, is making or bringing your formation or your line or how you want to play, your style of football, but not using the players that you have at your disposal to make that decision, right? You come in with, this is my idea of football, and then you're not using what you have mm-hmm. to determine what that style is. So I think that that's really interesting. We'll see if there's a formation change, but that's a problem with Fran Alonso right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's set on not changing his formation and his style. And I think there comes a point when you have to look internal and say, okay, after 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, when do we say, let's feed to our personnel strengths that yep. we have on the
well,
pitch?
Well, with that too, if you're a player on the pitch and you're like, I feel like I'm constantly being in a position where I'm not able mm-hmm. to actually perform well or thrive or be effective, and it's affecting my game and my confidence coming into a match, I don't know. My money's on Portland taking this win, even yep. though it might be a sloppy game.
I agree with you there, actually, now that we're talking about that, because so much is breaking down within Houston. Let's go over to the next match, Orlando against San Diego Wave. Are we expecting to see Barbara Banda? Because Orlando has had, you know, a good start to their season thus far, unbeaten in the first four matches for the first time since 2021. That's massive for them. Barbara Banda, the addition that we want to this Orlando Pride side.
Yeah, I think Orlando's going to be great. Having Barbara Banda, Adriana, Angelina, Marta, so many effective players, that is a scary lineup to go against. Even if she just comes on as a sub and gets some minutes to get her feet under her, I think this is going to be a really dangerous Orlando side. Marta's heating up. She's looking like OG Marta. We're seeing her be in really effective positions, getting on the end of balls, scoring goals, really being a leader for this team. I think Orlando has had a difficult time this whole league. The entire time that they've been in the league, where they haven't had a solid identity. There's been a lot of shifts. They have a lot of ups and downs. It's a big roller coaster of a season every year for Orlando. And I think we're finally seeing some steadiness of this team. And it's just going to get better. Barbara Bander's going to elevate them so much in the front line.
Hopefully help them score from some more goals. 3 one-goal games for Orlando. Yeah. They need Banda.
And we've seen her in training recently, and things are looking good for them. So hopefully we see her towards the end of this match and get to see her in action with Marta. Let's go over to Kansas City against Bay FC, because when I talked about this match on the schedule, Lisa, you got excited because it's all goals, no
yeah,
vibes.
I mean, it will be. If you've watched
it's
anything the first 4 weeks between either of these sides, it is offense, offense, offense. Let's look to attack, let's score goals, let's push towards the end of games to get that extra on, whether it's in overtime or extra time we're added on. These teams want to score goals. They want to move in transition. I honestly think Bay is going to keep a little bit more of the ball than Kansas City will. But Kansas City, they have threats going forward that we saw last week, specifically against Gotham up top, whether it's Bia Zanarato or Chiwinga, they can get in behind. It's going to test Bay's back line. And Jenny, yes, I'm expecting goals. If this isn't a shootout, I'll come back here on Monday and eat my words. Don't worry.
I'm not going to even say anything, because you know it will be. You know there will be goals here, so there's no even a reason to bet against you there. Kansas City record 12 goals in the first four matches of the season. Absolutely incredible stuff. There's other matches we're going to get to, but we're going to get them at the other end of the break, and we're going to talk Chicago with Sandra, so we'll get to those then. Thank you, guys. We got another one for you quickly.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The NWSL on CBS is back this weekend, and we'll be bringing you a couple of great matchups. On Saturday, the Washington Spirit hosts reigning champs Gotham FC at 1 p.m. Eastern, and you can tune in to CBS and Paramount+. Then on Sunday, Angel City take on the North Carolina Courage at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on CBS Sports Network to close out the weekend. Be sure to catch all the action. All right, Darren, you already spoke about Gotham being a team of two halves. They're going against the Washington Spirit, who are coming off a three-match win streak. What are the big matchups, the big player matchups that we need to be looking forward to in this match?
I'm thinking it's Rodman, Nyswanger. That is something I'm really looking forward to. Corey Bethune, Emily Sonnet.
Oof.
Those, I think, are two positions that are going to be very exploited. Who's going to have a good game? Who's maybe not up for the challenge at this moment. I don't know, but I like those two. Jenna Nyswanger, seeing her defend a little bit more 1v1, which is something we've all talked about wanting to see. This is going to be a really, really good test because we know that Rodman likes to go end line. She likes to go 1v1. She's saucy on the ball. She has that signature pullback move that we know now is the Trinity Rodman move. But I hope that Gotham comes out the way that they ended the second half. Crystal Dunn,
Esther in the midfield, Ryan.
Katie Stengel, and Lynn Williams. I hope she gets a little bit more minutes, gets her feet under her a little bit. Jenna Nyswanger in the back, and then that midfield, Yasmin Ryan and Emily Sonnet. This is going to be a handful for Washington Spirit, but they're also stacked. Ule Sarr, Ashley Hatch is back and healthy. It's going to ask a lot of questions of both. I'm not sure who's going to come out on top. But I really, really like this game.
So whichever team starts this game faster and stronger is going to have the upper hand throughout it. Because when you look at the first 3 weeks, let's just say, of NWSL season, for both Washington and Gotham, they've started matches slow.
Yeah.
And they've grown into games. By the 75th minute, they're looking really in good form. They're executing their tactics. They have good player rotation. So whichever team, Washington or Gotham, starts this match on the front foot with their tactics in mind, they are going to be able to score first and then continue to grow throughout the game. It's going to be the difference in the first 45.
It is, but I'm also intrigued because both of these teams, we've been seeing them morph their identities a little bit, and I think this last week showed both of who they really are, especially in the second half. You're right, they have had late starts. I think they're both going to start that way. I think it's going to be...
Make for a great game then.
It'll be a great game.
At that point. But if Gotham continues to have really good rotation with their front four attacking players, that's going to be tough for Washington to defend against, honestly.
Lisa, you have a great point there. Okay, whoever starts faster, whoever starts with the right tactics, how do you get that to happen as a coach, right? When you're a player, how do you kind of understand that, okay, from the first minute, we have to be on 100. We saw Gotham go from not a great first half tactically to a good second half, like you mentioned in your tack pack. How do you make sure you start that way as a coach?
Tack pack, I like that. They need to come out and not be afraid to play against the Spirit. Against Kansas City, I believe the Gotham was nervous about Chwinga, nervous about Bia Zanarato, which rightfully so. I mean, they made a goal literally out of nothing off of a massive transition. But they need to come out sure in their identity, certain of what their press is, not have anybody arrive late to the press because that's where Gotham got obliterated by Kansas City. Spirit, same thing. I think they need to come out, let Rodman just run free, go 1v1, put Gotham on their back foot, and try to whip some balls into the box or get some shots for herself.
Brilliant. We're going to make sure we watch that match. When we move over to Angel City against North Carolina Courage, North Carolina is winless at Angel City. Does that history matter, or is this team immune to that, Lisa?
This North Carolina side is immune to playing at BMO Stadium in LA, hands down, because they understand so well tactically what is expected of them on the pitch under Sean Nahas. North Carolina has shutout wins in their last two matches. So not only have they been developing their tactics in the attacking end of the field, understanding spatial awareness, Ashley Sanchez has just dominated for this side. She's going to be so, so important for them to control the midfield against Angel City. And also defensively, North Carolina's done a really good job of keeping teams at bay, limiting their opportunities, and not just relying on goalkeeper Casey Murphy to bail them out of situations.
No, I completely agree. Angel City, it's an ask of how can they start scoring goals? they haven't had a clear opportunity, besides Claire Emsley maybe whipping some balls into the box, Sid LaRue getting on the end. They're not playing together as a team. And we actually spoke to Casey Stoney about over a week ago, and she talked about how they really need players feeling confident. They need to go out and be brave on the ball and not be fearful of making mistakes. Madison Curry, I think, is a player that we should highlight who's been really, really good for Angel City. She's come in, and Casey Stoney said, is a little oblivious, but in a very beautiful way, where you're not worried about the ambience of the crowd or the mistakes that you made. You're just there to play and learn and have fun and really support your team. And I think they all need a little bit of that because Angel City just looks a little hesitant. It's a big task going against North Carolina because this is such a team that has a defined style of play. They're clearly bought in with Coach Sean Nahas, as we all are. We love the way that they play. But if Angel City are able to get a win from this game, it will be huge for their confidence moving forward.
Angel City's midfield is one that has some question marks around it right now. We've seen Becky Tweed rotate in different players. Lily Nabet got the start last week. Before that, it's been Amadine Henry. I think if they can solidify their midfield and have some stability there, it'll help them moving forward. It's not going to be good enough if you aren't confident in your midfield trio going up against North Carolina this weekend, who just has such powerhouses in there with Denise O'Sullivan and Ashley Sanchez.
When we talk about this North Carolina Courage team, this is a team that beat Portland Thorns 2-0, right? This is a different Portland Thorns team, but still a hefty feat to go. When we talk about that midfield, like you mentioned, Hopkins, Sanchez, Lucy, Mira, and Denise O'Sullivan, I mean, they have something working out there. Matsukubu is the one that I think has just been outstanding.
Yeah, Manaka up top has done a really good job of occupying spaces that are really tight. She's so comfortable on the ball in tight areas. We talk about being brave in this game a lot and in the NWSL and wanting the ball. At North Carolina, every single player on the field wants the ball, which makes it really good possession soccer, and it's really, really fun to watch because they're showing for each other. They're comfortable in tight spaces, and they're able to just float around and have really good movement off of one another.
And with that being said, North Carolina knows that if they do rotate positions, they know exactly what the role is in those positions. Everybody could rotate, flip the field in half, and switch them all. They will still know what they're trying to do. So you're right, North Carolina is it's a big task to go up against.
Beautiful. Well, we're going to have Sandra Herrera join us next to talk through all of the news and the NWSL matches as well, so stay with us.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back into Attacking Third. It is now time for Sandra Herrera's segment where she is the OG Attacking Third member. She's going to give us all of the information that we need to throw her way. Sandra, welcome, welcome, friend.
Hey, how's it going, y'all?
It's going great, and even better now because there's big news coming out for the Chicago Red Stars that they are playing at Wrigley Field in June for the first time. What is the latest on this exciting news?
The latest on this exciting news is just that it keeps being exciting news. I mean, it was already a pretty historic announcement when they said that they were going to pivot the June 8th game against Bay FC to Wrigley Field. And all of these historic boxes that they were going to check off. First ever women's pro soccer team playing within a Major League Baseball stadium. The fact that they were going to be the first ones to do that. How were the ticket sales going to look? Is it going to be a mutual effort to make sure that this is a game that's accessible to a lot of folks within the city limits? And all of those boxes, turns out, are getting checked along the way because, from what I've been told, just 90 minutes into their on sale for these tickets, they have sold over $10,000. And now the club is having conversations around whether or not they should open up more parts of the ballpark to the public to try to basically sustain the demand. So there's still tickets available if you're looking at it. But if you go on the site, you can see there's all these kind of like grayed out areas. So slim pickings for now. But imagine that number is going to just get higher for them.
So much excitement. Continuing with that excitement with Chicago Red Stars and Alyssa Nair. Goalkeeper kits are selling out. They have been made available and they are extremely popular. Sandra Herrera, how exciting is that part?
Listen, I know I want one. I think you all want one. I think the goalkeeper jersey conversation has been one that's been ongoing. I think even the last couple World Cup cycles as well. These are the players that arguably, you know, depending on who you ask, might have the toughest job on the pitch, and they have a large fan base because of it. So it's not too surprising that once you make something available, you're finding that these things are getting sold out. But I know on the Chicago Red Stars side that they've got some availability on those goalkeeper jerseys, so I would imagine that folks are flocking their way there. But these are all really good things to kind of point to as the Red Stars take these first steps into what's been considered kind of a new era for the club. They entered into this 2024 season with new ownership, with a new deal for Mallory Swanson, who was coming back from a lengthy injury. How was she going to look? And they've surprised some folks, I think, along the way, going from last place to kind of having these results along the way, and now having all of these other really cool activations out alongside the club to kind of energize the fan base and kind of get new eyeballs onto their product has been really cool to see come to life.
Well, Sandra, if you're at the game and you see a spare Alyssa Nair jersey, I'm a medium and I can Venmo you. Let's go over to Portland Thorns.
I got you. Let's talk to some folks. Let's figure something out.
Head coach Mike Norris moves to technical director, and Rob Gale is now the head coach for the Portland Thorns. Are you confident about this move? I think as a player, I wouldn't feel that confident if I were Portland. I would want a bigger change, in my opinion, because they all kind of affect each other. They're all part of the same issue that's going on. How do you feel about it?
Look, I think you're perspective there is important. I think when we're thinking about the player side of things, it still leaves maybe a little bit of unresolved, kind of the questions with unresolved answers. So I'm just a little curious as to how something that is categorized as an organizational soccer operations restructure really just had what I think I've been referring to as 1.5 moves. You're essentially moving a head coach, not out, but promoted up within an organization, and then naming an interim head coach. And general manager Karina LeBlanc has said that this means that they are going to begin a global head coaching search immediately, and emphasize that it's going to be about the quality of coach that they bring in versus how quickly they're going to get that done. So I'm with you, Darren. I think that kind of maybe adds a little bit of pressures or anxieties on players in the locker room. So it's just kind of saying like, okay, well, we're just going to have to continue to figure things out a little bit along the way. I think hopefully there will be a little bit of grace there to maybe see what Rob Gale can put in place. But I think for a lot of clubs out there right now going into week 5, it's a long season in front of them. There's 26 games in front of them, and this is really going to be that final game of perhaps that first fave. How do you tackle a long season bit by bit, bite by bite? So for a lot of teams, they go by phases. And with this fifth game, they're going to start entering into that second phase of the season. So maybe this is coming at a good time, but it doesn't really leave a lot of, I think, new solutions for a team that has been struggling to find them on the pitch right now.
We'll see how Portland responds, right, after this change happens sometimes in the front office and which coaching staff. They look like a different team the first week back out. So it'll be interesting to watch Portland this weekend against Houston. All right, Sandra, let's stay in the NWSL and let's stay in the Pacific Northwest, because Seattle Reign, they have some new ownership conversations, and there's been news breaking there between the Sounders now almost merging a little bit with the Seattle Reign in ownership. This has been something that has felt like it's been on the verge of happening for a long while now. Now that it's finally happened, what change do you expect to see in Seattle Reign?
I think we will see some changes, but that actually might not come until the following season. I mean, this has been a really long, ongoing process. And while I think folks are celebrating that this has finally gotten resolved, that there's a new wave of ownership in, obviously, the Reign are going to stay in Seattle. That was a huge conversation as well whenever you look for new ownership. I think when it comes to getting such a new change involved in a franchise, you really maybe don't see that change until the following season. I think we're witnessing that with Chicago, and I think we'll witness that with Seattle as well. So a little bit of mixed results right now, I think, for both Pacific Northwest franchise. I don't know, maybe it's something in the water right now.
Yeah, something in the water, and I have to say it's about time, because before I went to Seattle, they moved us up to Tacoma before merging with the Sounders, so it is about time. let's go to the expansion sides. Everyone keeps calling me a native Utahn. I'm a native Utahn. Utah and Bay FC, there's a good matchup. What have we learned so far about these two expansion sites? Because I think they've had two very different journeys since joining the NWSL.
Oh, Darian, tell them how you really feel, okay? As a native Utah, you should probably be demanding a little bit more from the Royals. I think they're a team, again, we're talking about mixed results. I think they're the epitome of that right now. I think there's always a level of excitement that you want to, you know, give a little bit of grace to a team to kind of show us who they are. And I think folks are still waiting for that bit of a statement from this franchise, from the team on the pitch as well. They are still making moves right now. You know, during this week, they just dropped a new player out of New Zealand. And so these are all things to kind of generate excitement and say, hey, they are recognizing that they maybe need some more pieces here, that they maybe need to generate some more in the attack. So that's a good sign. But I think the jury's still out, I think, for Utah Royals. Whereas where you look at Bay FC and all the statements they have made already, I think a lot of the players that they brought in have done just that, have generated that buzz for the team already. They've gotten their first win at home. Lots of excitement there. Asia Ashwala kind of putting the league on notice, saying, hey, I might be an early, way too early candidate for MVP here in the league. I think there's a lot to be excited about for Bay FC to come.
Yeah, when we continue our conversation about Bay FC there, especially in comparison to Utah, a bit of mixed bag in terms of the results, right? Getting their first win was a good one. But when we continue to talk about them, how are they going to continue to grow under this Albertine Montoya style? I think that there's still a ways for them to go, for them to be that team. Sandra, what do you see potentially growing there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think maybe just to piggyback off of what I said earlier about how teams kind of looking at this week as sort of wrapping up phase one of the season and trying to propel themselves on success into phase two and the next stretch of games in the season. We have seen Bay FC kind of fade a little bit down the stretch in some of these games. And maybe it's been because they've had to find themselves on the end of some very wild, chaotic, extra added time games. But we want to see them kind of tie that up, right? And maybe that's what comes with the early days of a season where maybe there's still some pre-season-y form and players are still kind of getting their legs under them. So hopefully we get to continue to see them play some exciting dynamic attacking soccer, but hopefully we also get to see them put together 90-minute stretches where they can kind of go ahead, produce, and close out their games.
Beautiful. Thank you, Sandra, as always. It is such a welcome introduction. A welcome addition to have you on, as always.
Thanks.
All right, guys, we're going to be talking about UEFA Women's Champions League semifinals when we return, so stay here with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Though the past can't be rewritten, the future is yet to be forged.
There's more pressure here coming from Aitana Bonmatí. Aitana, and the world's best player does it again.
It's Ramirez. She's in. She scores for Chelsea.
The best of Europe face off for a spot in Bilbao.
Toto forward to Chewinga. Chewinga strike. And she scores. She's given Paris Saint-Germain their opener.
Cascarino. Diani to her right. Cascarino goes alone. Stunning goal.
Titans fighting for the continent's biggest prize. Will a new name be etched on the trophy, or will dynasties continue to reign?
Lisa Carlin's voice under that, goosebumps. Mm-hmm. It is Champions
TV
League
magic.
Semifinal
I'm here now.
Time. Beautiful, absolutely beautifully done. Let's talk about the semifinal matchups, right? We're going to start with Barcelona against Chelsea. Barcelona is the only opponent that Chelsea have never beaten out of the 29 opponents that they have faced in Champions League. How insane is that? There is a need for this Chelsea side to beat Barcelona to win a Champions League, the elusive Champions League under Emma Hayes. Lisa, is it happening this time?
I don't think it is, Jenny. Oh. I hate to break your heart for Chelsea fans, but Barcelona is just too dominant at this point. They have too much depth. They have too much rotation. They have they're just too strong on the pitch. And when you look at the other side for Chelsea, they've struggled all year with injuries and having players be out and limit restrictions and minute management and having a different rotation. They've gotten it done up until this point. But when you look at the form that Barcelona is in, Graham Hansen being in such good form right now, when you look back to last year, right, 2023, she was the dagger in the heart of Chelsea during that match in the Champions League as well. But Graham Hansen down the right flank, she's so dynamic. She encourages the 1v1. She wants to go at defenders. She wants the ball in tight spaces. And she just creates so many opportunities for Barcelona that it becomes a trickle-down effect for the rest of the team, just thriving on all of their attacking prowess.
Yeah, she has 5 goals, 5 assists so far. Her, Salma Perruelo, 6 goals. Rolfo's back and healthy. It's just attack after attack after attack from Barcelona. And Chelsea, I don't know if they have the same depth and waves that Barcelona can attack with. And I agree with you. I think Chelsea's going to get the loss here. I don't think this is going to be the time that they take over Barcelona. But it's going to be a good game. I'm not sure if Chelsea's going to have much possession of the ball. It's going to pin them back. I don't know if they'll have much opportunity to go forward. And when they will, I have a feeling it's going to be a lot of Lauren James going solo. I think Barcelona can handle that.
The way that Chelsea could potentially get one in on Barcelona is because of their mindset right now. They're knocked out of both cups that they were looking to win trophies for. So they have a bit of vengeance in them, but it's going to be on the counterattack for Chelsea. That is the only way, if they can unbalance and disorganize Barcelona's defense, is if they move quickly in transition, 1-2 passes, get down the pitch, and ultimately find Lauren James.
Set pieces, too. Could be a big opportunity.
I think you're on it. You're on the money there, right? Because Barcelona keeps so much of the possession. They top their group in Champions League. They are the reigning champions. They're playing at home first. All of those things come into play here. But when we talk about Chelsea, they're dealing with injuries. That potential transition aspect, a little bit more difficult because of all of the injuries that they have now, Lisa.
Exactly. And it's going to be interesting to see how Emma Hayes rolls out her side with the players that she has. But ultimately, Barcelona being at home, I think they're going to have the advantage over Chelsea.
When we talk about the other semifinal, it is a French semifinal, Lyon against PSG. This is something that we have seen time and time again, Darian. The three previous semifinal meetings between these two teams, Lyon has been victorious. So they are just completely dominant when it comes to this tie. The Women's Champions League top scorer in Diani is on Lyon as well. But because these teams have seen each other so often, how difficult is it when you play a team so many times in one season?
Yeah, it's tough because how do you add an element of surprise to your attack? Mm. How do you do something a little bit unpredictable? These teams are so familiar with each other. They know how they defend. They know certain players' tendencies. They know how to shut down certain attacks. I think it's going to come down to a mentality. Lyon, I think, has the leg there. PSG never has that edge that they need to get to the finals of something, or let alone take it home. I think that that's been an issue for them for a really long time. Lyon has been in these positions many a times and come out with the win. I think that they have a little bit more conviction when they're attacking, even though we've said they should be scoring more. They still do it better than PSG. It'll be a really entertaining game because most of these players play on the French national team together as well, so they're incredibly familiar. If you watch like even their social media clips, they're all still hanging out together. Yeah. So I think there's who's going to bring a little bit element of surprise, who's going to have a stronger mentality, and who's really going to finish their opportunities. My money's with Lyon.
Ooh, I like that shout. Because Lyon and PSG are so familiar from their French league, it's going to come down to game managerial decisions, in my opinion. It's a chess match now. How can they show something a little different, whether it's moving players around in different positions or asking different players to play different roles, whether it's a little bit more attacking-minded or covering in behind. But for Lyon, they just can create chances in such a variety of ways with shots from distance, crosses into the box. They have little slip passes in behind. I'm also going to go with Lyon on this one.
Lisa.
But did you hear that this could potentially break a record with over 30,600 fans there?
No, that's going to be the record.
It'll be huge to see.
Before we end the show, I just want to say something on the men's Champions League side that we've been talking about is giving props to the teams and the leagues that have sent all these teams into the semifinals. Again, 2 French teams into the final. Good shout to them as well. Thank you guys so much for joining us today on Attacking Third, brought to you by PNC Bank. Brilliantly boring since 1865. We're going to be back on Monday at 10 p.m. to recap all of the weekend's action. We'll see you then.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.